Welcome to the Highbury Squad. You can follow us on Twitter at Highbury Squad. In fact, you can find us on all the social platforms, including Facebook, SoundCloud, YouTube, and iTunes. Join me, Sophie, at Soccer Diva, Amanda, at Goonagirl1969, and our very special guest, Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell, at 1 Kevin Campbell. It's just like being down the pub with your mates. Oh, and never forget, always Arsenal. Welcome to another episode of the Highbury Squad. Joining me today is an uber legend. The word legend is used very loosely, in my opinion, in today's game. And this fella is certainly a legend. He's won 4 championships, 3 FA Cups, a European Cup, a Super Cup. He's also written a fantastic book, which maybe he'll give us another copy to give away. He's a good friend of the show. Welcome back to the Highbury squad, all-round Liverpool and Scottish legend, Mr. Stevie Nicol. How about
hey,
that?
Hey, Sophie, how are you?
Good, mate. How are you?
No, I'm doing fine, aye.
Excellent. So, a happy proper football is back, and our two clubs meet again this weekend at the grand old place called Anfield. You know, the first game between Liverpool and Arsenal was when Arsenal was still Woolwich Arsenal, and it was in 1893. We lost 5-0, Stevie, in the last game we played against you. You thumped us 5-1. So 126 years later, we meet again. And the last time we beat you at Anfield was in 2012, which I believe was on Bill Shankly's 99th birthday. It was a 2-0 win, goals from Podolski and Cazola. Are you feeling more or less confident about this game this season against this particular Arsenal side that has strengthened during the summer?
I have to say that in recent years, I haven't really been too concerned about Arsenal coming to Anfield. But I would say on this particular occasion, I'm not quite as confident. I still think, no question, Liverpool are favourites. But, you know, there's two things. There's the way that Arsenal have been attacking, not just from this season, but, you know, the back end of last year. And the way Liverpool have started the campaign defensively, I have not been particularly impressed with at all. So, you know, those are the two reasons why this particular game, I'm not quite as confident, certainly as I have been in the last 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah, and I would argue that some Arsenal fans may be going into this confidently, maybe overconfidently. Do you think the vulnerabilities we saw at the back for Liverpool during pre-season, Stevie, and it has continued a little bit, Southampton unlucky to not get a point against you, Ings missing that sitter, Aubameyang and Lacazette probably wouldn't miss that. Does this have anything to do now with the defensive non-confidence in Adrian in goal? Is that a big issue for you as you go into this game?
No, I don't think so. The whole pre-season, pretty much, certainly Alisson missed the first part of it, but the games that he actually played in leading up to the Norwich game, they had been letting chances in. You know, they certainly have been letting the opposition create chances, and they either never took them. And Southampton's a great example. Mm-hmm. You know, had they taken the chances, this game could have been 4 or 5-5, you know, something like that. So, no, I don't think it's down to Adrian. I mean, in fact, against Southampton, you know, he made some saves. Yes, it was an almighty blunder for the goal, but he actually made some good saves that kept Southampton at bay. So I don't really think it's got anything to do with Adrian. It's very difficult to put your finger on it because this is the same back four that was so outstanding last year who actually, if anybody got an opportunity, it was a little bit of a surprise. You know, that's how good they were. But that is not the case this year, and it's difficult to put your finger on why. I don't know whether it's maybe a little bit, I don't know, maybe they think it's just going to happen. You know, sometimes when you think it's just going to happen and you forget that you have to do that extra yard defensively whether it's closing the ball down or thinking quicker, taking somebody up an alley where they're not getting anyone near the goal. You know, there's just a little thing missing, and as I said, it's hard to put your finger on it.
I was gonna ask you about that because you do have the same players. You didn't strengthen. Do you think Liverpool are a little bit more vulnerable against an Arsenal, against a City, against the bigger teams this season because of those lack of transfers? And if you were going to see the team buy a player, which area of the pitch do you think that would have made you even better this season, if that's even possible, because you were lights out last season?
Yeah, if I'd had my way, I would have signed De Ligt. Mm-hmm. As a partner for Van Dijk. Not only did they play together for the Dutch national team in a tremendous partnership, but De Ligt's a great defender. You know, if Liverpool have a vulnerability, it's on that right-hand side where Matip, in my opinion, isn't... I would replace him, put it that way. He's a good enough player and he's shown that he can do well in that back four. But I just don't really trust him. And I think that Alexander-Arnold is better going forward than he is a defender. And so if Liverpool have any sort of vulnerability, it's on that right-hand side. And I think with the signing of De Ligt, that would have solidified it. And I certainly think you would have found De Ligt would be talking to Alexander-Arnold an awful lot more than I think Matip is. I don't think Matip particularly helps Alexander-Arnold defensively. So if I could have had one signing, that would have been it. And that back four.
And that would have been some signing, if you'd have been able to capture him. Do you also feel like one of the things I feel that Arsenal can do in this particular match is maybe expose your midfield a little bit? Obviously, you have Wijnaldum, you've got Milner, he's a hybrid. He could play pretty much anywhere. He's just a baller all around. On the left, you've got the Ox, who's, you know, still finding his feet after a terrible injury. Arsenal, if you like, have strengthened in that midfield area. Ceballos is going to be able to cause some problems. Do you think that's an area where we can really take advantage of you in this game? Would you say that is maybe one of your weaker links, even though your defence hasn't really hit the ground running yet?
No, not at all. I couldn't disagree more. I'm not worried about your middle of the park. I'm not a fan of Xhaka. I don't know if he's going to be fit. I think Zendouzi works really hard. You know, Ceballos, we will see whether he can actually defend, because there's no question. You know, it's one thing to play at home against Burnley. It's another thing to be playing at Anfield against Liverpool. And I'm not as happy with the middle of your park as certainly it sounds like you are, Sophie.
you know, getting a bit too giddy over here.
Well, I think as far as being dynamic, Liverpool, no question, outdo your midfield in the middle of the park. If Liverpool are at it, you know, harrying and closing the ball down, they're far more dynamic than I think what you can put in the middle of the park. And so that will be a key. Now, I won't probably surprise you by saying that if Liverpool do own the middle of the park, that means there's going to be questions asked in your back line. And again, you know, as well as you defended, particularly David Luiz against Burnley, it's a whole different ball game away at Anfield than home to Burnley at your place. So this will be the test. This will be the real test, whether that back line can actually defend or not. Yes, they've done it for the game against Burnley. Can they do it at Anfield? And that's probably ultimately where this game will be decided. If that back line with David Luiz in a four, because I don't particularly think he's very good in a four. I think he's way better in a three. When Chelsea won the Premier League with him in a three, it made it easy for him. All he had to do was clean up all the bits. He could go around, he could play the ball out from the back, he could step in the middle. You know, he didn't have to do any real defending as such. You know, no marking, no making challenges. It was all about reading the game, and I think that's what he does best. But that's in a three. So I think big time this game hinges on what you do, what your back four is going to produce against Liverpool's front three.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if Emery keeps faith with Willock and Guendouzi, who both have been great in pre-season, had really good starts to this season. Like you said, it's a different ball game when you go to Anfield. And, you know, I think the thing that scares us most, obviously, is your front three. You've got Salah, Mane, who's just been insane already this season and hasn't really, you know, got into the swing of things, if you like, which is kind of scary. And as much as Salah and Mane get the plaudits, Stevie, the one player who I just think is the engine, the nucleus to everything that you do, and I think a lot of Liverpool fans might agree, is Firmino and what he brings to the table. For me, when I look at the team sheet playing against you, I'm more afraid of him and what he does to allow Mane and Salah to be the players that they are. Do you think he's appreciated enough, and do you agree that he's the guy that really helps make that forward line tick?
You know, I would have said up until last year he was unappreciated, but I think everybody's beginning to come round to figuring out this guy's huge. You know, he basically, he always takes up the two centre backs. You know, they can never figure out where he's going to be, and so when you've got Salah and Mane coming at you from either side, and you try to keep an eye on that, as well as figure out where this guy Firmino's gone, because he does all kinds. He drifts in behind you, he drifts in front of you to pick the ball up, he'll take you away and leave a hole for one of the other two. I absolutely agree with you. You know, he's such a smart player. And to have a great brain and be so clever and see the game for what it is, but to also have such a good touch and be able to play little passes. And you know, I'm a guy that's not keen on people flicking around the ball. But when this guy does it, he's always on the mark. You know, it drives me crazy when I see players trying little flicks and it gets cut out and everybody's like, oh, that was unlucky. I'm like, no, keep the ball.
Yeah.
You know, don't gamble with the ball. But this guy, 9 times out of 10, those little flicks and those little tricks that he does, they get to the intended target, and you just can't argue with it.
When you think about the game this weekend, what frightens you the most about Arsenal? The obvious, I think, being Aubameyang and Lacazette. And do you think one has become more important than the other, or both now in Emery's mind are as important as each other, and as much as he can play them together this season, he will?
Well, I wonder whether he will, because Listen, I obviously didn't watch Arsenal as much as you did, but I kind of got the impression that they didn't always play together. You know, sometimes Aubameyang would start, and then sometimes Lacazette would start. And then depending on who they played at home, they would both start. If Unai Emery wants to get in the top four, he's going to have to play these guys together regularly, because both of them could score goals. Both of them are a threat. So why would you not have two threats on instead of one at a time?
And he did that towards the end of last season, didn't he? He kind of got into the groove of playing them together a lot more. And I think, I'm not saying he came under pressure from the fans as well, but clearly we're a much better team when the two of them play. I think his biggest pickle is, you know, you're generally, Lacazette will play up front, Aubameyang on the flank. And then now with Ceballos, you've got that question of Reece Nelson, Ozil, you know, Mkhitaryan. So I feel like for the first time in a long time, he's got a bit of a pickle, hasn't he, in terms of choices up front?
Well, again, it really is, depends on how you look at the game. You know, if you're a coach that wants to make sure you don't lose goals before you score goals, then you wouldn't play the two of them together. But if you're the attacking coach, you go, hold on a second, if I'm the opposition, do I want to play against Aubameyang and Lacazette, or do I just want to play against one of them? And if I'm the opposition, I'm quite happy if there's only one of them. I don't want to play against the two of them. So if Unai Emery starts thinking positive, then you'll see Lacazette and Aubameyang playing together a lot. And personally, you know, you need to win games to get in the top four. And if you've got two guys like that, who, given chances, will score goals, You have to get them on the field.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I would argue that they've both become probably the most important players or the most dynamic and exciting players up front since Robin van Persie left. We really haven't had that kind of threat. And coming to Anfield, obviously we don't want to open ourselves up and be vulnerable. I think he'll probably be a little bit conservative to start off with. What's your thought on Emery this season, Stevie? Because he's definitely been given the tools and resources. We haven't even mentioned Pepe, a world record signing for us, a player that Liverpool, Tottenham, Bayern Munich were all after as well. Do you think this is a make or break season for him? Or do you think that he'll get the Klopp treatment? Because at the beginning of Klopp's career at Liverpool, you guys struggled. And then really solidifying kind of your evolution with Alisson and Virgil van Dijk saw you 1 point away from winning the league and you ended up winning the Champions League. Do you think he'll get that grace period the way Klopp has?
I'm not sure whether this is a positive or a negative, but you've got two of your closest rivals going for the top four in Manchester United and Chelsea, who are in a bit of a pickle right now. And I think if I was in the board of Arsenal, I'd be thinking, you know, we need to take advantage of this. And so maybe that goes against them. You know, had Chelsea and Manchester United been flying and had they been challenging Liverpool and Manchester City, then I think it would be a lot easier for the board to say, well, you know what, we've got a little bit to go to catch these four, so we'll give them more time. So I kind of think it depends on how the board's thinking. You know, if they're thinking, this is an opportunity for us because these other two are struggling, then maybe he doesn't get the time. I clearly would say he should get the time. You know, you can't build something overnight. Unfortunately, today, very few clubs let people do that. And the great example is Liverpool and Klopp. You know, they've given them time and look where they are now. So I certainly hope they give them time, but it will depend on how they look at this year.
When you look at what Arsenal have done over the summer in terms of where we've been and where we're going, where we've come from, do you think our realistic chance is top four, Stevie? Or do you really think with the vulnerabilities City have at the back, Liverpool haven't strengthened. Still, that's, I think it's like 28 points we would have to make up from last season. Our away form was absolutely atrocious. If we win five of those games, we get into the top four. We're definitely excited, I think, just because there hasn't been anything to be excited about for so many seasons. Spurs are, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Eriksen. Chelsea are going through a major change. Manchester United, still a bit of a hot mess. Do we have a shot at believing we could challenge for the title, or should we be calming down and saying, okay, you know what, first step, top four, we go from there?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you have to be realistic. You know, there's no point in setting goals that are just not possible, because then everybody's just going to be disappointed. So you have to be realistic. You know, none of the other sides, I don't think, are going to be challenging Liverpool and City for the title. But yes, Arsenal definitely can challenge for the top four because, you know, by hook or by crook, the way Chelsea are, I don't see how Chelsea are not going to struggle all the time. Every time they step on the amount of pressure right now that's on them, everybody I speak to is like, well, this is a big game for Chelsea. And then the next one, this is a big game. I mean, the spotlight's absolutely on Frank, and unfortunately, I don't think he's got the players to dominate teams. I just don't think he has that. So, again, depending on how you want to look at it, no question, Arsenal are looking to get in the top four, and I think they should. I mean, the last time that I kind of felt as though there was a feel good factor with Arsenal was when Unai Emery came in. I think he went on that. First
22
games, you know,
it was ridiculous.
So there was there was such a good feel factor that kind of it seemed to erode over a period of time after that. But it kind of smells a little similar this year. There seems to be a more of a feel good factor, probably because he signed the Pepe, Ceballos, and of course David Luiz. So signings are always good for fans. You know, everybody gets reinvigorated, and you know, it makes them feel as though the club are trying to change things and get better. And I think Arsenal are, and I think they have got better.
Yeah, and I think with Tierney still to come, you watch a little bit of Scottish football, and you've probably watched Celtic a lot more than I have. All I hear about is...
I'm a Rangers fan.
I know. That's why I thought I'd throw it in there. He's definitely an exciting young player, isn't he, Stevie? And a great signing for us. When you think about Luiz, Sokratis, maybe Bellerin coming back at right back, you've got Tierney, Leno, who I think has been one of our better players last season too. Tell us a little bit about Tierney and what you've been hearing about him up there in Scotland, and do you rate him?
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's about the tools. He has the tools. You know, he can defend. He can go forward as well. So he's proven that in the Scottish Premier League, but the Scottish Premier League's not the English Premier League. It's a step up in thinking more than anything else. Everything happens at a different pace. I mean, yes, physically it's harder, but you know, when you're playing in it and you're training in it, you eventually get that strength. But it's all about the brain. Can his brain change from the pace of the way the game was played in Scotland to where the pace of the game in the Premier League? And that's what it is, because as I said, he has the tools. You know, given time and space, he can defend and attack, but can he adapt to how quickly he has to figure things out? And that's the only question, because, you know, as I said, he has the tools. Just as Robertson had at Liverpool, you know, he always had those tools, but unfortunately when he was playing at Hull, he was having to do more defending than he was attacking, and so we never really saw what he was capable of doing in an attacking force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what you've got to look forward with Tierney is he going to be as good as Robertson going forward? But no question he can defend, but can he adapt? And that's the only thing you have to think about.
Yeah. So I think Arsenal are kind of following, I'm not saying we're following the Liverpool model of the last couple of seasons, but Josh Kroenke's come out and talked about how we should be excited that, you know, we should be shooting for the Premier League. You know, one transfer window is not going to get us there. It's not going to do that. From an ownership point of view, I think we've been a bit jelly of Liverpool, to be honest with you. John Henry, you know, won the World Series with Boston. He then goes on to win the Champions League with Liverpool. He's a man who's trusted his manager, put his money where his mouth is. And we've seen this massive evolution this summer. We had the Weak Air Do You movement. I'm not saying that was the nucleus to us signing players. Those things happen over a period of time. Do you believe in this new communications from the Kroenkes with Arsenal? I think for the first time, I don't think we're being placated. Am I just a hopeless romantic believing, or do you feel like there's a genuine shift?
I think when you go out and spend 70 odd million pounds on somebody, then that's a statement. You know, I find it very difficult to believe that somebody's sitting in an office going, okay, how can we keep them quiet without, you know, how can we get one over on them when we're not really that bothered? Okay, let's go and spend 70 million. I can't imagine any businessman thinking that way at all. You don't go and spend 70 million on one player unless you're trying to get better. So, yeah, I don't think this is not a part of a silly game they're playing. I think, no question, they're looking to get the team on the field better and get them, first and foremost, back into that top four and back into the Champions League.
Yeah, I think we're all in shock, to be honest with you, Stevie. I don't think we were expecting it. We were going into the summer fearing the worst again, and here we are, you know, in a position to really challenge and get back into that top four. Before we get to some audience questions, you're listening to the Highbury Squad with Liverpool legend Stevie Nicol ahead of the big game at Anfield this weekend, Liverpool v Arsenal. You kind of look at the league, and it's a long season. You know, we've heard a lot about how Wolves and Leicester and Everton could really, you know, maybe get in the mix. I don't see them breaking into the top four at all. How do you feel the competitiveness of the league is now? Do you feel like it really is two different leagues? You've got maybe three. You've got the top four. You've got that 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and then everyone fighting for their survival. Do you still feel the competitiveness is there in the league, and that it still is probably the best league to watch, most exciting in Europe?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you can, again, you can spin it any way you like, and you certainly can't argue that probably there's three leagues. You know, you've got the Liverpool and City, who I think are the ones that are going for the title, and then you've got a host of clubs in between, as you said, and then you've got your, you know, your Sheffield United and Aston Villas who have come up, along with maybe Crystal Palace, who, you know, so yeah, I would say yes, there's maybe three divisions, but I would also say that the teams at the bottom, the so-called big boys, have to earn the right before anything happens on the field of play. You know, there's not a team goes out thinking, we can't do this today and we're going to give it everything. And if we don't win, then they're going to know they've been in a game. I think sometimes it's too easy to look at Man City and they're winning 4-0 and 5-0 and whatever. But I think when you look at the games, you can say, you know what, they've had to work for it. And they're just far better players, but I don't think there's any less physical exertion involved in it. I don't think any team in the Premier League can go out and say, okay, we've got a game on Wednesday, we can take it easy today because we're only playing so-and-so. That is not how it works.
I can't let you go without asking you this question too. By the way, we've got a question coming up from Super Kevin Amanda for you as well before we do let you go. Are you or are you not a fan of VAR? Do you feel, I mean, I fear that a lot of our narrative this season is going to be about VAR. I hope it's not. I hope we kind of settle into things a little bit like Bundesliga and MLS have. Takes time. Fan or no fan, do you think it affects the game in a different way, in an experiential kind of way?
Not at all. I'm a fan, huge fan of it. I don't understand this hoo-ha that's going on, because the decisions they've made, pretty much 99% of them have been correct. I think the only one that they didn't look at was in the Spurs City game when Rodri got pulled to the ground. But the decision that was made in the extra time or the added time is absolutely spot on. I don't understand how anybody can have a problem with that.
I agree.
I have no problem with it. It's the rules. And yes, you can argue whether you think that rule should be in play or not. But the fact is, it makes it really simple. It simplifies everything. There's no argument about it. We all know exactly what's going to happen. And so what's the problem with that? I think the only problem we have is that IFAB, if they start sticking their nose in and changing too many things, then that was always going to be my worry over VAR. How far are they going to take it? I think so far it's been great. I think so far all the things that they pick up on are pretty much spot on. I think maybe it's time to just halt it for a period of time, maybe 4 or 5 years, and then revisit, you know, maybe look back and see how they think what's going on now. Is that enough? Or is it even too much? I don't think it is, but so there's so many things that are good about it, but I just hope that they don't carry it too far and start meddling too often.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the issue in the City-Tottenham game was the rule, not the VAR decision. Right? I mean, it's the rule, yeah. The rule that people had an issue with. What do you think of that rule, by the way?
I think it's great. I mean, how many times do we argue about, is it a penalty? Is it not a penalty? Is it handball? Is it accidental? Is it intentional? And so, under no circumstance, in my opinion, should a team benefit from the ball coming off one of their players' arms and the ball ending up in the back of the net, whether it's straight in the back of the net or whether it goes to somebody like Jesus and then he puts it in. And as I said, it simplifies it. It's not even a discussion anymore, because everybody knows that's the rule, and then you apply it, and then on you go.
Yeah, completely agree. Right, a couple questions for you. We've got one here from Kevin Campbell, who you've played against in the past, and he's also going to read out a question from a mega Liverpool fan, Red Nose John. So here we go.
Hi, Stevie. It's Kevin Campbell here, mate. It's great to play against you. I've got a couple of questions. One's from my good mate, Red Nose John, who's a big Red. He asks, how would Sui have done against Patrick Vieira and Roy Keane? And who would you choose between him and Stevie G? That was from Red Nose John. And my question to you, Stevie, was, or is, you played numerous positions for Liverpool. What was your favourite position? What was your best position you felt? Listen, look after yourself. I know you do loads in America. I watch you on YouTube and all that. Keep up the great work, and we will hopefully speak to you soon. Take care, mate. Cheers. Bye.
Right then. Kevin, super Kevin Campbell keeping you busy there, Stevie.
I'll tell you what. And he's playing. I think he would beat up any of the two.
That's epic.
In his prime, I'll tell you what, you won't fight him, you won't go near him.
He was strong player, huh? Difficult to defend.
Do you know, I tell you, the unfortunate thing about Souness is people remember this hard man image, which is true, 100%, as I've just told you. But Jesus Christ, could he play? Could he pass a ball? Could he pick a pass? He could put the ball in the back. I mean, he could do most things. So, you know, if you wanted a game of football, then he'd outplay you. And if you wanted to fight, he'd outpunch you and outkick you and out whatever you wanted.
He was a lot more technical, though, wasn't he, than he was given credit for?
Absolutely. Well, yeah. That's the thing. People remember this hard man thing, but but you don't play for Liverpool when he did, and the teams that he played for. And win the trophy that he did, if you can't play.
Yep. It was quite some leader as well. So, well, that would be great if they could simulate those games today and we could see Souness versus Keane, Souness versus Vieira. What about Kev's question about you?
Roy Keane would have to go higher than the knees because Graham would have been higher than the knees.
throw Steve McMahon in there and you've got yourself a good old-fashioned fight. what about Kev's question about your position and what your favourite position to play was?
I mean, that's tough. I just enjoyed playing. There was great things. All the places I played, there was great things about all of them. But I mean, I'd have to say one of the most enjoyable periods I had was playing with Barnsley on the left hand side, playing behind him. You know, because that made it easy for me to get forward because I could roll the ball to Barnsley and then off I would go, knowing that he wasn't going to lose it. You know, part of the problem, certainly in the 80s, was if you went forward too early and the ball was turned over, then Ronnie Moran would have his finger in your nose when he got the chance, asking where you were. So you couldn't just disappear on a gamble, on a win. So having Barnsley in front of me, being able to roll it to him and then being able to get around the outside of him, knowing that he wasn't going to lose it, was huge. And of course, again, not just to play with him, but to actually sat behind him and just watch him playing and watch him go past people. Fantastic.
So following on from that, Caleb, who's a huge Liverpool fan, wants to know, who's a better right back, you or Trent Alexander-Arnold?
I'm definitely a better defender than him. I think he's got a little bit to learn. You know, the one thing he does do defensively when he's one-on-one is get square. He gets square on. Mm. I think going forward, he might even... I mean, I don't think he's ever going to score as many goals as me, but some of the balls he puts in are absolutely fantastic. And I think the way that they want him to play is more about assists than actually scoring goals as well. So I guess he's never going to get the opportunity to score as many goals as I did. But I'll tell you what, I'd like to think if I could put a ball in the way he does, then I would be happy with that. But I think defensively, I've definitely got the edge on him, and maybe putting the ball in the box can get the edge on me.
Yeah, I would agree. He's got a long way to go yet, Stevie, before he gets to legendary status. Okay, here's one from Amanda, which I'm sure is going to be cheeky in some way, shape or form.
Hey, Stevie, it's Amanda. I'm so sorry I can't be on the pod with you this time. I really enjoyed our chat last time. I just can't make it. But thank you for coming back to the Hybrid Squad pod and chatting with our Sophie. So I do have a question for you, and no, it's not related to the fact that maybe you should have taken Mickey Thomas out in the 89 league final match. I promise you it's nothing to do with that. I just got a question for you. Your old club won their sixth European final last season. Any of those players would get into your team in the 80s? Of all of the players that were playing in that final, who would make it into your team?
See, I knew it. I knew she'd throw something in there. She's always got to have a little dig, doesn't she? But what do you think? What do you think? Anyone That's a good one. Good question.
That's a tough one, though. I'll tell you what, Van Dijk and Hansen wouldn't be a bad partnership, would it?
Oof. That's, as they say, as the kids say today, that's football porn right there. Crikey.
That would be a partnership and a half. I mean, you look at the middle three, I don't think any of the middle three would. You know, certainly they're dynamic, but I don't think they have the actual football ability of the guys that we had in the middle of the park. I mean, how do you take Rushy out and Kenny Dalglish out?
Yeah, you can't. You can't.
You can't.
You can't. What about the goalkeeping? The goalkeeping situation. Do you think Alisson would get into your squad back then?
Do you know, here's the. You can't argue that Alisson is absolutely fantastic, but because the game's played slightly differently, you know, there are goalkeepers don't come for crosses, you know, and the balls they use today are so fast that goalies really can't. They can't. It's very difficult for them to judge coming for a cross, unless it's just a bad cross that's looped up in the air. Then they really can't come, and they don't come anymore. So I'm not sure how Alisson, Bruce Grobbelaar coming for crosses was absolutely phenomenal. And again, it's a little bit like the soonest thing with Grobbelaar. People unfortunately forget how good a goalkeeper he was. They always remember the clowning around that he did. And yes, he had a couple of clangers, but you know, if you're going to come for crosses time after time after time, there's going to be an occasion when you don't quite get it right. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, with the reputation Bruce had for clowning around, whenever he did make a mistake, it kind of got doubled down, you know. So
yeah.
I'm not so sure Alisson would be as good coming for crosses as Bruce was. I mean, I'm sure Arsenal's back four with Tony and the rest of them would probably say the same thing about Seaman. You know, when a ball's come in and it's not quite of the quality, they would be quite happy. They would know Seaman's coming together. And we were like that with Bruce. You know, somebody looked the ball in. I mean, we just... Right, get out his road, get back on the line, just in case, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, no, agree. I mean, our defence at that time, that'd be the Mount Rushmore of defence, you know, for me. You know, it was unbelievable. That whole season was unbelievable. It was, to me, still the most exciting season. Here's, I've got one for you before I let you go on your prediction and stuff, but the better ending has to be, I know you're on the losing side, but surely that ending at Anfield with what we had to do, with you being like the most unbelievable team in the whole of Europe at the time, is a better ending than the Aguero City goal against United. Would you agree?
I think it's very hard to separate them, to be honest. I mean, it's difficult to imagine how exciting it would be for both your fans and City fans. How could that be any better?
Yeah.
And for and just for your you know, somebody who's just a football supporter and likes watching football, I don't think either of them can top the other one. They're just both pretty special moments that happen in football. As you said, unfortunately, we were on the wrong end of one of them. But you know, those are things that I don't think you could top any of them.
Yeah, well, you made up for it the following season, right, Stevie? You righted the wrong the following season. And I'm gonna squeeze one more in from Cheeky Red Nose John, because he said you'd like this one. How many packet of crisps would you recommend eating before a pre-season friendly?
Oh, God. Never again. Never again. Once bitten, as they say. Dear. Yeah, that wasn't good for my guts or my underpants. So put it that way.
So epic. And by the way, our listener last season, Dave Ricketts, who's a massive, he travels everywhere. He's probably the number one Liverpool fan, although every Liverpool fan will say that. Really enjoyed 5 league titles and a packet of crisps. Thanks so much for giving the book away. maybe we'll give another one away if that's cool with you, and we'll do something fun for our listeners.
You know what? I wouldn't know where to get. I don't have any. I'm giving them all away, Sophie.
Oh, you're sold out.
I'd love to give you one.
You're sold out. Okay.
Well, I don't think sold out. The freebies I had are all sold out.
All right. Well, we'll pick one up and we'll send it to you so you can sign it, and then we'll give it to a lucky fan. How about that?
No danger. That wouldn't be a problem.
All right. Lovely. So thank you so much for your time. You've been generous. I cannot let you get away, of course, without giving me a wee prediction for this weekend's game.
Well, I'm going to completely shock you and say Liverpool wins over that.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I'm hoping for it. I hope we don't lose, put it that way. I hope we don't lose 5-1. Yeah. How about that? I can't.
Well, I do.
Oh, dear. Well, listen, Stevie, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate
it. No problem.
And hopefully we'll get to chat to you again in the next few months, and say hi to Craig Burley and tell him that he owes us a visit.
I will, no problem.
All right, mate. Thank you so much. Thanks a lot. Take care. Absolutely top shelf stuff there once again from Liverpool legend Stevie Nicol. I could listen to his football stories all day long. He's always got some amazing insights. The old school stories are really the best, and he's so engaging when it comes to football conversations. So thank you so much to Stevie Nicol. You can catch him, of course, on ESPN FC Daily. You can go to ESPN Plus. Also catch past episodes. I think they post them to YouTube. KC seems to think they're on YouTube. So check it out. He and Craig Burley are never shy to really tell folks what they think. As you know, Casey and my girl Amanda are not on the show today. And Amanda is out celebrating her son Jack's GCSE exam results. Well done, Jack. Congratulations. Brilliant job. You've made mum and your whole family very, very proud. Hopefully your brilliance can rub off on the Arsenal this weekend. It's such a big game. And, you know, I can't wait to watch it. I haven't been this excited about a Liverpool-Arsenal game in a long time. We're going to find out a lot about our team over the next couple of matches. We got Liverpool. We have the enemy. Arr! I tried to sound like a football pirate there. It didn't quite come off. We are playing the enemy, the nemesis. Call them what you want. I think we all know what we like to call them. And it's going to be very telling in terms of the kind of team that we can be this season. Granted, you know, last season, we started off losing early to Manchester City and Chelsea. We went on an amazing run. So anything is possible. The season is long. We're not going to panic if the result is negative. But let's find out here what our girl Amanda thinks for the fixture of this weekend.
Hey, everyone. Sorry, I can't be on the pod tonight.
after two straight wins, we head off to Liverpool. I'm sorry, but I've always been truthful on this pod and I can't see us winning. I think we're going to lose 3-2. I'm praying I'm wrong, but I think we're going to lose 3-2.
So as excited as Amanda is for this season, she's playing the realist card and going for a loss at Anfield. Who can blame her? As I said earlier in the show to Stevie Nicol, the last time we won at Anfield was in 2012 with goals from Poldi and Santi. And Liverpool really started off terribly that season. So, you know, hopefully we can turn the tide. And David Luiz and Socrates at the back. Socrates can be better at the back with David Luiz. You know, we've got this attacking force now. So, you know, anything's possible. But our girl Amanda is going for a 3-2 loss. What do you think Super Kev has to say? He's usually ever the optimist. Let's have a listen.
My prediction for the Liverpool versus Arsenal game. You know me, I'm always going to go positive. I don't care. I want Arsenal to win, and I'm going to go for Arsenal to win a close game 3-2. Two for Liverpool and three for Arsenal. Come on, you Gunners!
I think my eardrum just burst there on that last one, but I love his energy. Super Kev always looking at the Arsenal and believing they can win. That's probably the ex-player in him as well. When you go out onto the pitch, you always think that you've got a shot and that you can beat anybody. And that's the mind of an athlete too. And I think that it's not only the mind of an athlete this season. I think there are a lot of Arsenal fans who truly believe we could go up there and get a result. So Super Kev fancies us to beat the Scouse House in their Anfield Fortress. What do I think? I fancy a draw. I actually think it could be one of those super exciting games that we saw at the Emirates. Was it in 2017? The 3-3? That was incredible. I think that's probably my favourite 3 minutes of football under Arsene Wenger in the latter years. I think we'd all agree that was pretty amazing. If we can see that type of football, that kind of game, obviously I'd love for us to win. Not sure I see it this weekend, but I think that we're going to be better than we have been up there in the recent season. So let's hope for the best and let's just put in a shift. Let's go up there, show our faces and give Liverpool a hard time and let's find out who this Arsenal team can be this season. Thanks so much again to Stevie Nicol for joining me. Thanks, Casey and Amanda, for your predictions and your questions also. And come on, you Gunners. And I guess it's left for me this week to say, always Arsenal.